Harold Ramis wrote, directed, and even starred in some of the funniest movies ever made in the USA. Animal House, Ghostbusters, and Groundhog Day are just a few of them. Now, his daughter, Violet Ramis Steele, just wrote a memoir called Ghostbusters' Daughter, Life with My Dad, Harold Ramis. Now, it not only gives us a look at her dad's amazing career, but it also chronicles her family's complicated history. It's published by Blue Rider Press. Violet, it's so good to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
So you organize the book with chapters that focus on your dad's films and alternate with chapters on the story of your family in that life. Are his movies intrinsically woven into your childhood?
They definitely are. I mean, I was with him a lot as a young child. He took me on set with him everywhere. And even though most of my friends weren't watching those movies, I certainly had been seeing them from the time I was very small. So it's a huge part of my memories.
Were you ever in some of these movies too?
I was. I have like a very small background part in Caddyshack.
Wow.
And in Vacation also. So yeah, my little hallmark of fame.
So your dad was born in Chicago, right?
He was. He was born in Chicago in 1944, and he grew up on the West Side and in Rogers Park, and then moved to New York to do the National Lampoon Radio Hour, then to Toronto, where I was born. He was working on SCTV then, and then to Los Angeles, where I grew up.
And now, is that how he got into the movie business from his jobs over there?
It was. Well, he started at Second City in Chicago, and that was where he sort of got all of his formal stage training. And a lot of philosophies actually that he carried into his life. Always work from the top of your intelligence, focus on making the other guy look good. I mean, those were things he really took to heart.
Well, that's critical. It's just because that rings close to home. When you say always work on the top of your intelligence and make the other guy look good, mm-hmm. What does that mean?
Well, I think that there's, it's very easy to make an easy joke, a fart joke. Everyone will laugh. but, you know, and that's okay sometimes, but try to keep it all, you know, coming from a place of real thought and interest. That's how you will get a more dynamic show. And making the other guy look good, I mean, if you're just standing there trying to be cute, the show can be falling, apart around you. So if you're focused on the other people that you're working with, everyone will do better.
Now, your dad was also a joke editor at Playboy magazine. I'd never even heard of that title before.
Yeah. He was. That was sort of his first entertainment job. And he said 99% of the jokes were repeats. but he loved it. And he got sort of a glimpse into this party lifestyle that I think was very attractive at the time.
Yeah, that lifestyle. I was intrigued by what you write about him and his private life. But I know you mentioned that his time with Second City, and mm-hmm. it's sort of critical to his formation. And there was that TV show, SCTV.
Yeah.
A lot of people from that show go on to Saturday Night Live, but not your dad.
They did. He wasn't so interested in what was going on at Saturday Night Live. There were a lot of sort of competing personalities and big personalities, and he was more the guy that wanted to sort of be on the sidelines, you know, holding it all together, and that really wasn't going to be possible there.
And the first movie that he worked on, that was National Lampoon's Animal House,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he co-wrote Animal House with Doug Kenny and Chris Miller.
It was a massive hit. Did it surprise your father?
No. They were very confident at the time that they were sort of creating something huge. I don't think they knew maybe how long-lasting it would be and that it would really affect sort of comedy filmmaking from that point forward. But they thought they were, you know, the greatest thing going on. And so they felt like it was going to really resonate with their generation.
You were born in the late 70s. Mm-hmm. Was your dad already making films when you came along?
Well, Animal House came out in 1979. Okay. So, you know, that was sort of at the beginning. And then after that, Caddyshack, Stripes, Ghostbusters, obviously. So, you know, he was really on a roll when I was a kid, and it was very exciting to be around. I got to meet a lot of really interesting, hilarious people, and he was so generous about just including me in all parts of his life, so I really got quite an education.
I keep on remembering Ghostbusters, and I can remember as a kid just laughing so much at that film. Was he funny at home in the same way that he was on screen?
He was. I mean, and maybe even funnier because he was probably a lot sillier at home than he was on screen. People used to ask if he was a class clown, and he would say, no, I wrote for the class clown. So, yes, he was always funny, always sort of saw things through an absurd comedic point of view and really, you know, shared that that worldview with me.
What about your mom, Anne? She's an artist, right? You describe their life together as not quite traditional.
Yes, she is an artist. She's very unconventional. She prides herself on it. And she really, you know, she and my dad met in college. She really sort of pushed him to just take risks and make the leap into doing what he was interested in doing and not worry so much about what other people were thinking or what he should do.
Was he the primary caregiver, or was she?
He was. She did not take to mothering so much. I mean, postpartum depression was not really known about as much then, but she definitely had it. And he was a very instinctive nurturer, and so he really just jumped in and really never jumped out. So I was lucky in that way, and she clearly picked the right person to have a child with.
Were they living it up? I mean, were they hippies involved in the drug culture of the 1970s?
He definitely was. My mom doesn't need drugs to go to another world. Yes, he was in the party lifestyle. He, you know, definitely there was a lot of pot around and psychedelics. I mean, they were interested in sort of exploring consciousness as an idea. I'm sure they had a lot of fun while they were doing it, but they sort of took it as like an intellectual challenge.
I always have this image of him as sort of the nerd, the scientist, mm-hmm. And he was exploring a lot. You write about how they loved each other a great deal, but they also had a non-traditional marriage.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think because they met when they were so young, they were both very frank about who they were and what they wanted from life. And my mom, you know, as she was with me, was just sort of like, I can't be all the things that you need me to be. So if you need to find those things elsewhere, so be it. And they gave themselves that space to explore and even have other relationships while they were married.
Did they consider it cheating, or was it just a fact of existence?
Yeah, it was a fact of existence because there was no lie there. I mean, I don't know what they disclosed to each other at the time or what exactly their arrangement was. I was not privy to any of that. But yeah, they sort of embraced that they were on this journey together and that that may mean that they need to take separate paths sometimes.
And they ultimately did take a separate path.
They did. They divorced when I was about 9 years old and my father remarried a few years later.
What was that like for you?
I mean, it was an adjustment. Because I had grown up in such a sort of chaotic, out-of-the-box, like way out-of-the-box way. And his second marriage and family was much more traditional. However, you know, he was still the same, you know, sort of interesting, dynamic, nurturing person. And so he was really the constant through it all. And yeah, and we all kind of grew up together, him too, in a way.
Some people on social media are asking me, okay, so we know that he had an open relationship with his first wife. Mm-hmm. How young were they when they got married? What are we talking about?
I mean, it was 1967, I believe, so 22 and 23.
Okay, so
I mean, they were young. It was a different time.
And how long were they married?
They were married for 17 or 18 years.
Wow. So they were really growing with each other. They were kids when they got married.
They were. And he, I think, always sort of struggled with, you know, wanting to be that nice Jewish boy, the good guy that always did the right thing, but also realizing that he wanted to sort of explore maybe a darker or less conventional side.
If you're just joining me, I am speaking with Violet Ramis-Steele about a book she just wrote, Ghostbusters' Daughter. You speak about your dad who wanting to be this nice Jewish boy, but in the end he becomes a Buddhist, right?
Right.
What happened?
Well, he would say Buddhish.
Buddhish.
You know, he was always a seeker. So he really was fascinated by history, psychology, philosophy, spirituality, and not just any one version of that. He sort of wanted to get as diverse a viewpoint as possible. So I think the Buddhism, you know, sort of naturally tied in with his Jewish foundation and just really encapsulated, you know, sort of his ethical worldview. I don't know that much about Buddhism, so.
So he gets remarried, mm-hmm. and he goes off with his new family, and you stay with your mom. Is that right?
I mean, I lived with both of them, but yes, I stayed with my mom. Well, we stayed together. Our families, you know, even after they separated, they were still friends. My stepmother and my mother, you know, were also friendly. When I was in college, he and his wife and two sons moved back to Chicago. And even then, you know, I would go visit on school vacations. I mean, we really all remained close as a sort of blended family.
You're very open in this book, and I was struck by some of the things that you shared. So, for example, you write about trauma that you suffered at the hands of a boyfriend of your mom's.
Mm-hmm.
What happened?
I mean, I was sexually abused, like so many women that, you know, we're now hearing about. You know, I wrote this before sort of the Me Too and Time's Up movement started, although they've been going on, you know, forever. But it, you know, it just seemed like part of the story, and bad things do happen to everybody, and it's how you deal with it and the support that you have. And I was really lucky to be supported by my parents and believed and ultimately protected. So
you told your mother. What happened? What did she do?
I mean, she, I think, didn't know what to do, and I think obviously immediately felt guilty, but she called my dad right away, and, you know, a report was filed. Police came to my school with their little anatomically correct dolls, and we sort of went over everything that happened. And I went with my dad ultimately to the district attorney's office to talk about, you know, what going to court would mean. We ultimately decided not to pursue that. Which, you know, I do have some regrets about now, because that person ended up doing the same thing to someone else later. But, you know, I mean, we all had lots of therapy about it. You know, as a parent, obviously all you want to do is protect your child, and sometimes you can't.
I see in your face the pain that caused you. But what about your mother in this situation? I know that you said dad was a better traditional parent.
Mm-hmm.
How did she deal with that?
I mean, you know, it certainly wasn't her fault. I mean, it was really only the fault of this person. But, you know, I mean, anything can happen in 20 minutes when you're at the grocery store. And I think that's sort of the takeaway for me is, you know, you can't be there all the time. So the best thing you can do is sort of empower your children to not feel like they have to listen to any adult that's around.
Very, very well said. Your godfather is a famous man.
Mm-hmm, Bill Murray.
Why him? Why did they choose him?
That's a good question. I asked my mom, and she said, oh, I'm not really sure. He was tall and funny. But yeah, I mean, he and my dad were very close when I was a young kid, and also with his older brother, Brian Doyle Murray. And I think it just seemed like, you know, a good fit for our sort of upside down family. I mean, he was, you know, even then very unpredictable and could be very enthusiastic or just absent. He would pick me up and sort of spin me around and, you know, carry me around like a sack of potatoes. And it seemed like a lot of fun back then.
Do you still have a good relationship with your godfather?
We haven't spoken in a long time. He and my dad did have a sort of falling out after Groundhog Day, and they didn't speak for over 20 years.
Oh.
They were able to reconcile towards the end of my dad's life, which I'm very happy about. Bill and I have exchanged a few nice text messages, and obviously I wish him the best, but we don't have much of a relationship now.
Wow, that's unfortunate.
Yeah, well, there's still time.
I learned so much about your father, who, quite frankly, I always thought as the Ghostbuster.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that there were a lot of revelations in your life. You write about half-siblings, brothers,
mm-hmm.
like that you didn't know about.
Right. So my brothers and I mean, I was around when they were small, but we do have a half-sister that I sort of knew about because I was a nosy kid and I would read people's diaries. But yeah, we all met her as a family when I was, I think, 27. And
how old was she at the time?
Yeah, I was 27. She was in her, like, maybe 20. She was going to NYU. We only lived a few blocks away from each other, actually.
That close.
Yeah. And we've became instantly very close. I mean, she, even though she didn't grow up with us, I mean, she is part of our family genetically. And also, I mean, she's into comedy herself. She does stand up. She's a writer. Her mom is Amy Heckerling, the director. So she's sort of got, you know, both sides, comedy royalty.
Wow. So when that baby was born, what did your dad do?
He took me to the hospital to visit her, but obviously not saying who she was.
But why? Why would he take you?
I think he had to visit, and I think he needed a buffer.
But what did he tell you at the time?
He said, "We're going to see a friend. She had a baby. I'll take you to McDonald's after." I was very into babies, so I was happy to go. And
we have 30 seconds left for this segment, but what can you tell us about the final moments of your dad's life?
Oh, God. I mean, it was, you know, it was devastating. My whole family was with him. And, you know, I hope he felt all the love that we have for him, because he really was all of our rock and our hero. So.
Well, I can see it in your face and hear it in your voice. I'm sure he did. Thank you so much for joining me. And I've been speaking with Violet Ramis Steele about her new book, Ghostbusters Daughter, Life with My Dad, Harold Ramis. And on Saturday, June 23rd, Violet Ramis Steele will have a reading and signing at Bookends in Ridgewood, New Jersey. That's at 211 East Ridgewood Avenue in Ridgewood, New Jersey.
Something strange in your neighborhood. Who you gonna call?
Ghostbusters!
If there's something weird and it don't look good, who you gonna call?
And I'm Duarte Geraldino, and I've been speaking with Kristen Lawless about her new book, formerly known as Food.